Hey, what's up, guys? Before we start today's show, like how we usually do, I thought we'd deliver some, I wouldn't call this breaking news, but it's definitely news. I think it was Wednesday, the official Nintendo Switch online service launched, and for a lot of people, they're not too crazy about that because now they have to pay for the free service that they've been using to play games like Splatoon and what would have been Super Smash Brothers. Now they have to pay to use those online features. But that's not what we're here. We're not here to anger anybody. We'd like to talk about the NES online mode of it, which is a free download as long as you're a Nintendo Switch online member, which is $20 a year for the Nintendo Switch online, which I don't think is a bad deal at all, personally. But let's see if it's worth the value to you. The current games, guys, for the you get 20 games so far. Three more will be coming each month. So I think that's important to note that this is kind of like a Netflix thing. Except for there's no indication that the games are going to expire, you know, like that they're going to like fall out of the system.
Sure.
So the 20 games right now: baseball, tennis, Excitebike, Ice Climber, Super Mario Brothers, Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers, Balloon Fight, Ghosts and Goblins, Gradius, Pro Wrestling, Soccer, The Legend of Zelda, Double Dragon, Ice Hockey, Tecmo Bowl, River City Ransom, Super Mario Brothers 3, Dr. Mario, and Yoshi. Now, we've covered a surprising amount of those games already.
And very skewed to the launch titles.
Yeah, very skewed to the launch titles. I think I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 right now. 6 launch titles out of the 17 that came with the NES launch. Joe, what are your feelings? Would you invest in something like this?
Well, I mean, I think just of those games that you listed, which this is the first time I'm hearing this list, but I haven't played a lot of them, but of the ones I've played, I can count 10 that I would love to play, right? Like, again,
right,
like
that, in your bed.
Yeah. And that's out of 20, some of which of the ones that I didn't count, I don't know. So maybe they would be great. I think that's awesome. That's a good amount, especially the fact that you're going to be getting more. If you don't have access to it, like it's not easy to access a lot of these games anymore. I think it's great.
Yeah, Sean.
I'm going to go into a wider context for this.
Yeah.
I do think that there is some value there, but I do think that any time that there is something that was free and is no longer free, even though they're adding on this NES thing, I would still be a little salty about that.
Gotcha.
And I think that it's a very reasonable price, but it's a principle thing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that I'm going to pay for the service, and I will enjoy these NES games, and I don't think that I'll ever cancel it. I will say that it's strange that it goes from free to paid.
Yeah, here's the thing that's weird. You can never own these games, presumably, on your Switch. Unlike the Wii U, where you were able to buy Super Mario Brothers and then have it, and you can still play it today, there's essentially like an eventual expiration date to you having all of these awesome NES games on your Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that's also a thing.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of the fact that, like, and I might have this wrong of the way it actually works, but I remember, I don't have a Switch, but I remember when I was, you know, when I had the PS3, before PS4 came out and stuff, the online wasn't too great, and it was free. But now that you pay for online, I feel like they've put a lot more work into it. It's a little more polished and everything. And I think, I don't know, not to defend the decision to just suddenly make something that you were getting for free paid, but I think that they maybe try and get like an install base by making it free. Similar to, I think, like Spotify did this when it first came out. Like, you could just listen to anything for free. And they're like, okay, now we got a lot of people, but like now we have to make money.
Granted, yeah, I think it was a very generous time period that you were playing free online. I mean, both Sony and Microsoft don't offer a free online experience.
Not anymore.
But I don't think we're here to talk about the online. I think it's really cool that they have these games. I've been playing them on the Switch. Most specifically, I've been playing Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3, and The Legend of Zelda. And I know that we haven't hit The Legend of Zelda or Super Mario Brothers 3 yet, so I'm sure you guys are eagerly going to wait to find out if they're on our essential games list before you play them. But we already have, let's see, two essential games, Super Mario Brothers and Balloon Fight, are on that list. And depending on how this episode goes, you know, maybe Gradius will make it. And you know how close we were with Ghosts and Goblins last week.
We also have an old entry into the Essential Games list in this list as well.
Yes. Oh, that's a spoiler former. Alert.
No.
Yeah, the best of 86. Don't we do that? We do that in the best of 85 episode. Yeah.
We don't know what time period we're in. We don't know.
We're recording this months into the future.
Yeah. So I hope you guys will let me know what you think about it. You know, you can add us on Twitter at NostalgiaCast. Or just send me an email at contact@NostalgiaCast. If you've been playing it or interested in playing it, and if you want to know like more in-depth thoughts, I'd be happy to go into them. There's a lot of cool things that they offer that it doesn't necessarily tell you. Like there's a CRT filter for the games that you can put over them. There's save states, so this way you can, you know, kind of be, you know, a scum and do some and play games the way they weren't intended and try to beat them in multiple sittings instead of in one. And there's also like a interesting mapping to the controller too, where it's the back two, it's Y and B instead of X and A.
Fun,
yeah. But hey, whatever.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there a feature now to, if I'm playing Legend of Zelda, a one player game, I can play with you, Mike,
Zeldor,
somewhere else? And virtually hand the controller back and forth.
So I wish that the example, you're correct, but not on the example you used.
Not on Legend
of
Zelda.
So Legend of Zelda is actually getting a special version later in the road, which I'm really excited for because they are specifically calling them out as a special version. So
let's make a pause.
Yeah, hold on. It wouldn't delete him. Okay. Legend of Zelda is specifically making a special version. I think they also said there was going to be a special version of Super Mario Bros. 3 and Metroid. So I'm excited to see what these revised NES games might be like. But right now, only the games that actually had two-player in them support this online two-player where, like, you know, me and you can play, and you can be in your apartment, and I can be at my apartment, and we could play Balloon Fight or Mario Brothers. You know, like, that's cool.
That is awesome. I am not that I'm holding out, but I do wish that at some point in the future they make that tweak. That's my favorite thing to do on the PlayStation 4.
Oh yes, passing
one
the controller,
game, pass
yep.
the controller back and forth.
I'd actually be really interested to see if if you want me to hypothesize for a minute. I think that these special editions of these games could be kind of like a co-op feature where there's two links now, and you can be doing stuff in Hyrule, and the player two can be doing other things in Hyrule. It's similar to like maybe Metroid. It would be two Samuses, and you kind of just like link up whenever you want. Like, I think that
would be really cool.
That'd be really cool. I can't imagine what else would constitute a special edition.
Like loot boxes.
Loot boxes. Yes,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no longer does the old man in the cave offer you the sword. You have to pay 99 cents to unlock the sword. All right, guys, enjoy the episode of Gradius. Hopefully, if you don't like the Nintendo Switch and you don't own one and this was boring, hopefully you hit the chapter marker that I put in there for you, because iOS 12 also now supports podcast chapters, so your native podcast app can do chapters as well.
Don't plug iOS 12.
Gradius, it's a duel to the death with the evil Bacterions. And welcome to Nostalgia, chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Joe.
Guys, today we're talking about Gradius, I hope. I'm really not sure if that's how you say it.
I think it's Gradius.
I always thought Gradius as well.
There's something weird about like going online and asking how made-up words are, how do they sound? You know, it's kind of like, Joe, you'll relate to this, with Roxas, and I used to call him Roaxus.
Well, so, Mike, you don't know how to pronounce many
words. But it's
words.
Also verbally spoken in the game. It's not like you read it.
Okay, that actually sounds really stupid, so I need to rewind even further.
I have some of those with, like, Harry Potter and stuff.
I'm talking about, like, before we ever knew, like, before the game had ever came out, I was on Kingdom Hearts Insider,
right.
And this is not a Kingdom Hearts episode, so forget about it. We're talking about Gradius, or Gradius, but we're going to leave it at Gradius for the rest of the game.
You did promise last week that you would know how to say it.
Yeah, I know, and then I looked up online, and there was, like, multiple opinions. But it's the first horizontal shmup that we have for the NES.
That's true.
It's a lot, you know, it's a lot different than 1942 in that regard, if you think about it. I mean, forget like just the setting and stuff like that. But, you know, playing horizontal, it, I feel like it's a little more claustrophobic than playing vertical.
Yeah, I think that also had something to do with like just the size of your ship and everything right. else.
And this is the design. I think they just had more like variety in enemies, so there was more on the screen at once.
Right.
But if we can jump right into first impressions.
I'd love to hear it.
I would just like to say that this is the first game since Super Mario Brothers that I felt like actually came out on like an advanced console.
Okay.
Just because it was fast, it was fluid, it looked great, it sounded great, and I didn't feel like all of the enemies were just going to flicker out of existence at any point. This is just a very well-performing, good-looking game.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, I'll jump in with my first impressions here. I know the arcade version, and this is definitely, like, a step down, but it's not that 1942-level step down. This is a pretty competent port for Gradius, and you can kind of tell, like, nothing looks so different than it did in the arcade version that you're like, oh, well, I don't really know what that is. I mean, like, it looks pretty good in my opinion. I think it oozes, like, a lot of personality, a lot of creative design, you know. Each level is almost like its own theme and its own world, kind of, you know, even more so.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, more so than Super, well, not its own world. It actually all takes place on the same planet, if you can believe that. Even more so than, like, Super Mario Brothers, you know? It's like, in Super Mario Brothers, you had, like, World 1, World 2, and stuff like that, but they didn't look, like, so different, you know? In this, it's like, I really felt like I was in a different area each time.
Yeah, you're either going to, like, a magma area or an Easter Island head asteroid belt. Like, I don't know what that was about, but I dig it.
Right.
And then you got, at the end, you got that super fortress, or whatever they call it. I think it's got a name, a really strange name, if we have a manual ready.
The boss battle there? Yeah. The
final stage. I mean, I know that that's like, you're basically like coming up against the Bacterian army at the end there, but like, Joe, any?
Yeah, so I think we're all kind of on the same page with my first thing I thought was like, this is one of the most polished games that we've seen so far, I think. In terms of like the visuals and the colors and even the music, because there's like a lot of music changes in this, which is a lot to ask for, it seems like, in an NES game. So it doesn't get old that way. It felt very cleaned up and very, very polished.
Yeah. I think, like, just to go back to my first impression real fast, because I have played the arcade version. You know, the game is still just as hard as any other shmup too. Like, don't get me wrong. I died a ton. And, you know, sometimes if the game is good enough, like we were talking about in Ghosts and Goblins, like, that's satisfying.
Yeah. And I think going away from difficulty for one moment and just going into the differences between the arcade and the NES version, I think there are only, in terms of performance, was that you could only have, like, two of those little follow-y guys instead of four, and just like a graphical downgrade. I think that
you're talking about option there, right?
For option. Right. Yes. I think that other than that, it's pretty much like frame by frame.
Yeah. So just a little housekeeping for a second. This is Konami's first game for the NES, and you know, no longer do we associate Konami with you know, good graces. They pretty much just like to make pachinko or what
yeah, it's pachinko.
Yeah, pachinko games and
Silent Hill pachinko.
Metal Gear Online.
Pachinko.
Pachinko. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see, like, even their very first release on the NES is a pretty decent game that was pretty well-respected in the arcade, and then the port turns out to be good, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to say to botch this name here, but Hiroyasu Matsuguchi, he is the director for this game. This game is a sequel to Scramble, another horizontal shmup that pretty much, like, invented that genre a little bit, and they wanted to make a Scramble 2, and he was kind of like trying to figure out, well, how do you do something different than what Scramble did? And essentially, like, what it comes down to is that power-up system of being able to, like, collect power-ups, choose your power-ups, and kind of, like, sacrifice, like, okay, I can get this power-up right now, or kill a couple more enemies, and I'll have, like, a much better power-up.
Yeah, this has a really good feeling of progression in terms of grabbing those power cores and choosing what to activate at what time. Do I want to get the missiles now, or do I want to keep saving up until I can have that force field I think that adds a layer of depth to it.
Right. And just to paint a picture, you have like this menu bar at the bottom, and every time you grab, I don't know if it's every time you grab a power up, but after a certain amount of power ups, the menu, the selector automatically moves.
It moves
everyone
to the next one
the
every
next
single
thing.
Time. Yep. Mm-hmm. Every single time.
Yeah. It's every single time. So you have speed up, missile, double, laser, option, and question mark, and also loops.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you get another power up, you're back to speed up. And if that's not what you wanted, which was the first one, then
you played
yourself.
You should have
used your power up when you wanted it.
And theoretically, each power up is better than the one before it. But I didn't find that necessarily true. I really think that like option is like a mandatory selection. Like you want that stuff early on, and you want it like you want it for as long as you can hold on to it.
I think that, and just the force field actually gives you the ability to withstand fire. And I think especially in a shmup game, that is very important.
Right.
Right.
So the player controls the trans-dimensional spaceship Vic Viper. And, you know, you have to destroy, like, waves of enemies through various environments in order to, and this is now, like, a famous saying in the Gradius and shmup universe, is just destroy the core. it's like a thing people shout
really?
At each other. Yeah, yeah, like it's a huge thing, because if you didn't notice, at the end of every level, you have to destroy a core.
Right.
You know?
Well, so, I mean, I didn't consider that a core. I considered that like a Millennium Falcon.
Yeah. Okay. That's actually really funny that you bring that up. It did look like something familiar.
Right.
A Millennium Falcon is a good way of describing it.
Yeah, I think the only reason I knew that those were cores was because that's how they were described in the manual.
Right. Right. But it's in the arcade. It's referenced, and
okay.
It's also just like a reoccurring thing in the Gradius series.
Okay.
And Gradius is a series. For those of you that don't know, it's actually a pretty popular series, all things considered. But if you're not into these types of games, there's a chance you might have never heard of it. Anyway, you have to destroy the core, and then the main goal of the game, of course, is to defeat the Bacterian Army. That sounds pretty menacing, if you ask me. I think that's like a cool name for like an evil empire.
If you're a germaphobe, I guess.
Yeah, it's like maybe this game is like a Osmosis Jones style thing.
Oh,
like,
wow. Is this all happening in some guy named like Bobby Gradius's body?
Bobby Gradius. Like how we said that at the same time.
Me
we got
too.
Some good
we rehearsed
there.
That beforehand.
Okay. Way to blow it for everybody.
Give him a peek behind the curtain.
So, you know, let's talk gameplay. There's 7 levels. As I mentioned before, everything has, like, theme stages. Level 1, guys, did you feel like it was a good introduction to the Gradius? Was it too hard right off the bat? How did we do?
I had my initial thought on level 1 was, okay, this is moderately challenging, but it's not too hard, until I got to that damn volcano at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And that is, like, I think that was harder than anything that came up in level 2 or 3.
The volcano felt cheap to me
until
I figured out that you could actually destroy the molten chunks of lava that were thrown out at you. So you pretty much, I mean, this is going just into
I know, I think
strategy.
We should, yeah, you have to talk strategy because, I mean, like, I have the strategy.
I mean, I just sort of hid up in the top left corner and shot missiles down at it.
Right. Exactly the strategy
I tried a lot of things like that. But I would always get hit, and eventually, I did eventually beat it, but I can't really say it was anything other than luck. I was just like, oh, one of these times, I'm going to just dodge enough and shoot
my
enough
hitbox
down.
will miss all of them at some point.
Because
so,
what you're basically seeing is just, you have a volcano at the bottom, and it's just shooting just like dozens at a time of these like molten lava balls that are just like intertwining with each other and just weaving in and out of the screen.
Dodge them all.
It's very difficult to like keep your eye on all of them and dodge.
I will say though that like that top left area is definitely your safe spot, and I actually like kind of only with missiles in my arsenal, I was only had to like dodge like maybe one or two actual projectiles. Everything else was able to be like called off by the missiles. But like that's a thing in throughout this game is like figuring out where the safe spots are. That's not like it's not cheap.
Yeah,
it's part of the gameplay, and I think that's like something interesting that it's almost like you have to learn how to fight the boss. You can't just come in and fight these things.
And that's actually kind of true with all the enemies, because before you get to these bosses, you you're just flying through fighting ships, but there's usually like a ceiling and a floor.
Mm-hmm.
So there sometimes are things crawling on the ceiling and crawling on the floor. And I used to always, as soon as I saw something on the ceiling, I'd go up and shoot it so it couldn't shoot at me. But then sometimes you'd have to watch your back because more things would come from behind you. So you really have to like kind of pay attention to the patterns of like how many people come here. When do I have time to go up there and shoot them without getting killed?
And unlike Commando, I really love how, like, in this game, if you don't take care of business fast, like, that screen can get crazy, and it's able to, like, emulate all of those options, you know, like all of those different types of enemies and all. Like, yes, there's slowdown. Don't get me wrong. Like, the game does kind of slow down a little bit. But just the fact that, like, you could have, like, 40 things shooting at you if you're not careful, like, really ups the stakes of, like, oh, I gotta take care of the enemies as fast as I can.
Yeah, and I'll have a little more to say about that in a later stage when I felt like that was really important.
Okay.
Okay.
Sean, any other thoughts on level one besides the fact that the boss is a volcano?
But that's not the boss.
Well, it's not the boss, but, like, those cores, I think of those cores as almost, like, so, you know, like, that's the thing you have to do at the end of the stage, you know?
Okay.
It's
okay.
Like, the boss of each one is, like, you know...
I will say that it is very unique for the boss to be a volcano.
Shows, like, how unique this game is.
Yeah. I also like that you can just sort of go through a mountain and get some points. I mean, that was a... They hid some cool little bonuses around the stage, and this was the first hint of that.
Yeah, I think, like, there's a lot... That's, again, like, another Super Mario Brothers style thing. Yeah. And, like, I hate to continue to use, like, such a popular game as an example, but, like, you have to think about what we have on NES at this time, and, like, when you're comparing a good game, to compare it to Super Mario Brothers is a huge compliment.
I think so as well.
Moving on to, like, level two now, and things got a little crazier in this one. There was, like, some walls that you could shoot down that were, like, mandatory to shoot down at a certain point, but for the most part, like, the game ramps up really fast here in difficulty, and ships are really taking more shots than ever.
Yeah, I was just happy to see such a change in the layout of this level. I don't think this is on a planet anymore. Like, I think...
Right, I didn't mean... Sorry, I just meant, like, you're not traveling, like, planet to planet.
Yeah,
yeah. It's almost like you're on, you know, like, you're trying to get to the Bacterian army.
Exactly,
like, this is almost like their armada coming at you.
So you're just surrounded by all these, like, platforms that they're very angular, and you can get blindsided by those little turrets that grab to the top or the bottom of whichever platform there is.
What would you think that is in space, by the way? Like, those gray platforms?
I'm thinking, like, there's like space scaffolding.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's how I imagine. Yeah. Like, there's some space station around, and they got all these little islands.
And there's a bunch of, like, plastic stuff you got to get out of the way. I don't know what to call those pellets that you have to destroy.
I just call them, like, pink bubbles.
Yeah. It's a good departure from the first level.
Yeah, and Joe, if you don't mind me asking, like, what kind of power-ups did you go for on the second stage? Like, what were your kind of, like, go-to things to get through this level?
I don't know. To be honest, I think I didn't really, like, I didn't focus too heavy on, like, what's my strategy at the power-up. Every once in a while, I'd notice, like, oh, I've got the option, or I've got the missile. I'll use that now. But I really wasn't too often, like, I need to get to this one or get to that one. So that might have hurt me a little bit. I don't know if you guys got further than me. I only got to level four.
Okay.
I was using a lot of the secondary fire that shot up, because I thought that because there were so many of the enemies that were attached to the ceilings of these very tight corridors you had to go through, that I thought that would be the most useful use of those power-ups.
Yeah, I use that sometimes. I think the other one I probably used the most, but not for really any particular reason, was just the missiles.
Okay, missiles, okay, yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, missiles here, I didn't find that helpful, but laser. Laser was great in this
What laser was really doing
laser
for me.
Shoots through
It shoots through them?
Everything
I think I might have lost it pretty
plane.
Quickly, and I didn't notice that it was going through enemies, so I just never really tried to get it again.
And I'm not sure if, like, this is a placebo thing for me, but, like, I also felt like laser shot faster than my normal shot, like, or shot more frequently, maybe is the word I'm looking for, but it definitely felt like I was able to be more destructive.
Well, it's
with
also,
laser.
Isn't laser, like, as soon as you press fire, the laser is shown throughout that entire, like, horizontal plane, right?
Right, right, right.
So that's why it's faster.
I thought it's still shot. It was longer.
It was still a particle.
It's still a particle, but it's just a very long, thin one.
Yeah,
and it moves across the screen.
Yeah, it moves across the screen still. Okay. But it kind of like, to your point, John, I see what you're saying. It does kind of like stay through the screen. It goes from the trail.
If it hits an enemy, it'll just keep going and hitting the other enemies
correct,
on that plane.
Yep. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And this one at the end has like those annoying ships that shoot like bubbles out at you at the end. Before you fight the core,
thing I was thinking of was like, this is not as bad as the volcano. Because their equivalent, right, of the volcano?
Well, yeah, this is like, their boss for this stage.
And I thought, like, this is so much easier than the volcano, which I think overall the level I thought was harder. I mean, like the regular part of the level, but... Sorry, overall, I think the first level was harder because it included that volcano.
I think that, there is a point that, like, maybe these guys are easier because you can dodge them. But, like, if you don't take care of one quickly enough, now there's two on the screen. Or now there's three on the screen, you know? So you really just have to, like, try and figure out the fastest way to take these guys down.
And this, I'm looking at the manual for the first time now. This level is called the Stonehenge stage.
Stonehenge.
Is this? I thought we were on level two.
This is level two.
Level two,
I was confused too, but level two.
Stonehenge. Maybe
stage.
Those gray things are stones. Like clusters or asteroids, you know? Like
I'm just misremembering.
You're probably thinking of not Stonehenge, but Easter Island.
That's why I was confused too. Yeah.
Right. But just a little aside here, speaking of things that look like other things, I thought the pink bubbles, Mike, I know you'll understand this, maybe some of our listeners. I thought the pink bubbles looked like either your health or the boss's health in Kirby's Dream Land.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. I wouldn't say exactly.
To my memory, which has been a long time since I played Kirby's Dream Land.
I can see it. But wait, are you talking about Kirby's Dream Land or Kirby's Adventure?
Kirby's Dream Land.
Kirby's Dream Land for the Game Boy. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes. No, because, Kirby's Adventure is the NES one, and that does look a little different.
Yeah, and I'm sure someone will go play that and be like, they're both squares. That's really, like, their similarity.
Kirby's Dream Land technically is, like, you know, it's a black and white game.
In my brain, they're pink.
Some synesthesia with Joe over here.
So then we get to, like, evil Easter Island with these Moai heads. And the weird thing about the Moai heads is that they're a reoccurring thing in Gradius. Like, this isn't the only game that they're in.
Hmm.
It's definitely the first one, but they now are, like, an iconic enemy for the Vic Viper.
Well, I guess they've established that whoever lived on Easter Island before it became a ruin, they were from Gradius.
Okay, I never made that connection, but it took me a second, but now I realize exactly what you're saying. I'm still thinking that we're inside someone's body fighting the Bacterian army. Now you're saying that those people, like, supersized themselves, came out and brought the Moais to Easter Island.
It's just my conspiracy theory.
Well, I'll say this about Makaguchi talked about the Moai Islands in an interview, and he said, "We originally added the Moai because we wanted to give a mysterious image to the game. Xevious had used the Nazca lines, and we were inspired by that. But we had no idea the Moai would become a mainstay of the series like it has."
That is probably the most cogent thought from one of these developers that you've ever quoted.
Wait until you hear some of his other thoughts. He has some really good thoughts about this. For, like, being a director of an old school game, like, he actually remembers a lot of it, and we'll go into that later. But I like that the idea of, like, just, you know, like, this game should be weird. Like, it should make you question, like, where are you? And this
it
looks
definitely
familiar.
Is very weird. Yeah. I think a lot of the games we've played so far are still sort of grounded in a lot of the expectations that we should have. But, like, this is a game that really tries to throw a lot of this weird imagery at you.
You know what this is missing, though? This is missing, like, instead of just, like, black, which is fine because, like, space is empty.
Yeah.
It's missing, like, some trippy, like, 70s, like, lava lamp style. Like,
I think that might be part of why it looks so polished, because a lot of the background is just black.
Right. Yeah. It's also probably how they're able to afford, like, having so many more graphics on the screen than, like, most games were handling. I don't know the technical side of that. I'm sure they're actually just tricking it to make it seem like that. But can we talk about the Moai as an enemy? They're ridiculously hard.
They're
hard.
I remember thinking this might be as tough as the volcano. I compared everything to the volcano in this game, and I will from everything I ever do in
my life.
Out of
10 volcanoes.
This job is almost like one of those volcanoes.
I call it boss volcano.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. Also, I just want to real quick step it back because I did promise that I had something to say about
if we're moving too fast for you, Joe.
Forgot. I was thinking that on level 3 was when I really realized you got to kill things before you pass them. But it looks like on my notes here it was level 2 where I was already like, if I start passing everything and not shooting things, they're all going to be shooting at me from behind. I think that also carried over into level 3 too. But I noticed it in level 2.
Level 2 even just to go back since we're talking about it, like with all of the ship formations and stuff like that, I like how it changed it up immediately from level 1 and now they're going in like different directions, like they were coming at you sideways and then going up diagonally, like you had to kind of figure out, like you couldn't get comfortable and you need to shoot them all down to get those power ups. So I thought that was like a nice touch that like they're already taking the game that you thought you knew and changing it on its head immediately.
And as for those like trail things, eventually they add like 5 or 6 of them where there originally were just 4.
Right. And then they changed the whole game again with these Moai heads because it's pretty much like they're the level.
Right? Yeah, it's well, like, in like the second half of the level, right?
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's like now it's not so much about like shooting down ships or anything. It's kind of
about the environmental hazards.
Right. And surviving. Like, at this point, I want that question mark one because that kind of acts like a force field. Is that what it is?
It is a force field.
Okay. Yeah.
You can take, I think, 5 hits.
Yeah, and I think, like, that's what I want right now because these guys are shooting out, like, bubbles out of their mouth that are just destroying me. It reminds me, this is weird, but Super Mario Land 2, the 6 golden coins on Game Boy, has this level where, like, hippos have, like, these water bubbles come out of their nose. And you can jump in them, and that's what this reminded me of immediately.
You immediately jumped into one of the bubbles, like, out of just habit?
No, not out of habit, because the bubbles weren't big enough, but I guess I just mean, like, one thing that's not clear here is that the hippos in that game were statues, like, the size, like similar to, like, how these Moai heads were, and so it was just kind of like, I was like, was this a thing? Like, bubbles and sculptures and shooting them out? I don't know. Like, I don't think there's actually a correlation there, but maybe there is some conspiracy theory. The Moai heads, was anybody able to destroy them?
Oh, I didn't even know you could.
I was
just dodging the whole time.
Yeah, I was just trying to survive.
I don't think you can actually destroy, like, all of them, but there were certain ones that I was able to kind of, like, if they were at, like, a 45-degree angle facing me, and I shot them with, maybe it was the laser that was doing it, but if I shot them with the laser in the face, like, enough as they were coming to me, they would actually kind of, like, fall over, you know? Like, fall and kind of collapse, you know? And I think that that's just, like, a neat little touch, but it doesn't make sense why it works for, like, some of the Moai, but not all of them.
Well, maybe it's just because it scrolls at such a pace that you could never land as many hits as you needed to destroy more than one at a time. I'm not sure. It would just be strange if they had some that were like hard coded as you couldn't kill them, and some were destructible.
Right. And this level ends with another crazy boss battle of just a ton of ships coming at you, and then like, I don't know if they're shooting, like, little ships.
They're, like, breaking off into all different ships.
It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's not that much. This one, I think, is the hardest boss we've faced so far.
I disagree.
Sorry, Joe. I still think
the first volcano was harder than this.
Joe, I think you really got to go back
and try it with missiles. Volcano took me a long time. Yeah, maybe with the missiles I'll be able to destroy those.
Because the missiles are shooting directly down, so if you just go into
the
top
left,
you know, like, the
right.
I'm serious that, like, this one was the hardest one for me yet.
Yeah.
How are we feeling so far? We're up to stage 3.
This is about as far as I can get.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I got to stage 4. But did anyone else get to stage 4 and see what was at the end of fucking stage 4? Oh, can I say that?
You can say that because you're so upset.
End of stage 4.
I was hoping that
it was more than one other.
I was hoping that you didn't get to
that's
the end
as far
of stage
as I
four.
Got. That's as far as I got, because there were two upside down volcanoes shooting, but they still, like, gravity still worked the other way, so there's just double the pain.
It is weird that, like, well, it was weird enough that a volcano was a boss in this game. It's weirder that they're just like, well, just call it back. Like, yeah, the volcano's brother is really angry, and he's going to take you down.
I'm starting to wonder, like, what the flight path of your character is. The Mach Rider, what is this again?
The Mach Rider.
Vic Viper.
The Vic Viper.
Like, you are Mach Rider, but this is the Vic Viper.
I mean, are you, okay, you're going out into space, you're in this weird scaffolding asteroid belt, you're fighting some Maui heads, and then you just come back on the other side of the planet, because we all know that on the other side of Earth is just an upside down world. Is that what's happening? Like, did he take a wrong turn?
I don't know if it's so much as a wrong turn as just like maybe he's taking like a shortcut. Like, if you think about like he's on the upside down part of it, that like he's going under the area and like trying to skip it
going
all.
Going under
like,
the flat Earth. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Sean, but in this situation, right, not saying the flat Earth is real, but like in this situation, if you go under a planet with a spaceship, technically those things are on top of you and looking upside down, right?
Yeah, but then you would just turn over. Just turn over, man.
Yeah, you would just perspective-wise, you would just...
So he's flying upside down is my...
He's flying upside down and just decides not to flip
I think
over.
That there are just two upside down volcanoes. I think that's it. And you know what the name of this level is? The inverted space volcano stage. So they are acknowledging that the volcanoes are inverted.
An anomaly in space where two weird. Volcanoes have defied all gravity and created themselves inversely.
It's weird, though, because the first stage is just called the volcanic stage. It's not the space volcano.
Well, because, it's supposed to be the planet Gradius has been destroyed or, like, is in the act of destruction. And now this is just, like, they recreated... The space. I'm sorry, we're spending way too much time on the volcanoes.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's an interesting boss. It does have a safe spot though, Joe. I'm sorry to tell you this, but it's tough. Don't get me wrong, but you can do it. And I think one thing that would be really good for this stage is to have more of your option. So this way you have more of those guys. This way they can shoot as well. Because really, it's just it's a matter of dodging projectiles here,
right?
So since we were talking about safe spots, though, I thought this would be another good time for another Makaguchi quote. He says, "As for safe spots and such, we were able to confirm some of them ourselves, but most of them have been found by players. Simply put, they were bugs. We didn't plan for them to be there. This goes for slowdown as well as safe spots. But I think for Gradius, all the bugs ended up having a positive effect on the game, and I think we were extremely lucky in that regard. Although it's definitely true that those were the boom days of secret tricks on the Famicom, from the developer's perspective, we'd rather not have had those bugs."
Well, I think, in retrospect, he's perfectly correct.
Yeah, it's interesting that he's able to say, like, I wouldn't have wanted those bugs, but I'm glad that they helped the players.
Yeah, because it allowed for, like, strategizing. Like, if you know where to be during this special area, like, you can get further, and that comes from not so much skill, but that comes from memorizing the levels and just knowing what you're doing in this game. And I think that if at any time that you were just in a level and you could just, it was an equal probability that you could get hit, I think that would be more frustrating than not.
Right. You know, while we're recording this week that we're recording it, and weeks ago for you guys, Popeye came out. So I just re-listened to that. And we talk a lot about how in Popeye, it's so, like, random. There's not really any patterns. So it's just kind of like you don't know when something's going to come at you.
Right.
So this having those, like, the fact that there are those things that are, I guess, technically like exploits where you can find a safe spot is also because, like, there's good design where you can see what's going to happen. You can kind of see the patterns. You can pick up on the patterns in this, and that's what allows you to exploit those things. So
yeah,
it almost is still just a great game. Even
I
with
agree
those
bugs. With you. First, I want to say no one has ever compared a shmup to Popeye. So thank you for that.
Just in my head.
That is incredible. And like, I kind of wonder, like, you know, he's saying that, like, these things, you know, are bugs to him, right? But, like, in a way, it's these safe spots only exist because of the way that the AI, like, shoots projectiles, you know, like the way that they were designed. In a way, I feel like even if he didn't intend for it to be this way, this is like a necessary step for the game. Like to figure out which way the enemies shoot and behave and to work around that to find these safe spots. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think like even now, too, they're kind of like a staple in shmups is like finding your, you know, your pattern almost. Like the enemies have their pattern. So what's your pattern to get through the stage?
Yeah, it's interesting to think that a core like mechanic of a genre was discovered through oversight.
So going on from stage four, we have stage five, unexpected.
Whoa.
I know, yep.
Twist.
But Joe, you said you did not get there.
I did not get there. Are there five volcanoes on all sides of the screen?
There are no more volcanoes. Now there's like, it's weird because it's like tentacles, but they're like metal, I guess. And it's spacey. They're like, do you have the manual. Do you know anything about these guys?
I just know that the name of the stage is the mole stage, but M-O-A-L.
Okay.
Is that something I don't know?
I don't know what that sounds like. Moai.
That's the Moai.
I see. That's an eye.
What page of the manual are you on? Follow along,
I'm on
Joe.
A very like low res PDF. It looks like an L.
The level we're talking about. It's the antennoids.
Okay, yeah. They look like tentacle monsters, but like they actually, you know what they look like? They look like tentacools.
Oh, you know? Pokemon.
Yeah, reference. Pokemon reference right there.
Or like a tentacruel?
Tentacruel?
I wish I could find a picture.
I just wanted to say cruel.
So when you run
into an antennoid creature, go after the red spheres in the arm portions to destroy the arms. If you get to the central nucleus, the whole thing will go up in smoke. That's the manual's description of chapter.
It's kind of cool. It's like this wavy thing, like it's arm. It has like four arms on both, like two arms on both sides, four arms total. And no, it's okay. That's just the image in the manual that's provided to show you that, like, to shoot the red part. But like, essentially, you have to kind of like dodge those and aim for the center. It's like again shooting that core. You know, but this level, you know. It's interesting that I didn't think it was, like, so much harder than, like, stage three or four. Like, three is still, for me, that's a really hard level. Like, the Moais are killing me in that stage because, like, I'm taking hits from all directions. And as Sean mentioned earlier, like, my force field is only giving me, like, five hits before it's, like, you're on your own, pal.
Yeah, so I would hazard that if you can't get to the question mark, you're not going to spend all that much time in this game at all.
Right. All right. One thing we haven't talked about yet, though, is what happens when you just not game over, but just die. Like when you lose your life in the game. We haven't talked about that yet. And I feel like that's a big consequence because you lose every single power up you have.
Oh, yeah. So now you are probably near like a huge horde, and now you've been gimped to only being able to get like a speed up immediately because it'll give you at least one. It's as if you have like one power core on you. So you better be able to just fire one bullet at a time and get some more cores.
It's insane that that they were like testing this and being like, this is fine, because like it's not. If you're on like even stage three or four at this point and you don't have power-ups and you're at a certain point in the level, because like it has kind of like checkpoints every now and again, if you get to that point in the level, you might be toast. Like you might not be able to get any further just because your ship is like way too underpowered. And don't get me wrong, it's like really cool that the Vic Viper starts off as kind of like just this normal ship that you continue to get like more badass as it goes along. But to then like lose one life and then lose everything, and now you're just like this simple ship again trying to fight off like tentacle monsters and fleets of ships. It's like, it's just not going to happen.
Mike, I really think that you should start using the word antennoid, because every time you say tentacle monster, I get very uncomfortable.
You're getting those late night vibes again.
Thank you.
right, so stage six now we're on. This is kind of like the final stretch, if you will. There's not much more here, but unfortunately this is where my journey ends because I die here pretty often, and there's just no way for me to pick up enough power-ups to get back to normal here.
And also, just so everybody knows, too, once you lose all your lives, which what you start with three, lose all your lives, it's game over. You're back
game
to the beginning.
Over. Yeah, it's not like Ghosts and Goblins where it remembers what stage you were on, which was a really neat feature that we loved in Ghosts and Goblins.
But you could get more lives.
Hey, we're not there yet, John.
I didn't know I was spoiling something.
You're going to talk about something
that's
normal?
That's the twist
ending. I was going to talk about, like, couldn't you just get more lives from, like, 50,000 points?
Yes, okay, yeah. Sorry. I'm like wow. John, don't
it.
Tell them about
I didn't
about
know
points.
There was even a thing.
Yeah, now I'm
don't
very
tell them
no,
very curious.
All right, I'm not going to talk about it yet. All right, let's get through. Let's just walk through the game a little more. But yes, you are correct that, like, through points, you can get lives. And so
I know you're, okay.
That's nice that points have, you know, again, have that value that is worth something. Unfortunately, I just don't know if it's really, like, worth enough, since it seems like I'd rather have those points, like, maybe say, like, okay, once you get to 100,000 points, you're allowed to keep 2 power-ups when you die. Like, you know, it's like, there's no way to do that efficiently, but, like, maybe you could have them, like, pre-selected. So you just have to, like, go back into the menu and, like, it memorizes, like, how many you were able to option off on.
I don't know. If I had that option, I think I would just... If I had the option of doing that or getting a life, I think I would take the life. I mean, once you're out of those lives, you're back to the beginning.
Oh, I know, but all I'm saying is like, when I got to this stage and
it
then I died...
It might be impossible to get any
and
further.
And I lost everything. It was hard for me to build it back up. And it's just, like... The reason why this stage is harder, for the record, for me is because it's a lot of different types of enemies. And then there's also, like, these amoeba things that shoot out, like, bigger projectiles. And between dodging all the projectiles, trying to clean up the enemies as they're coming on the stage, and also, like, just dodging the stage in general, which is kind of, like, rampy and also has, like... I don't know, like vines, I guess, is the right word for that.
Just lots of obstacles.
Yeah, it's a lot of obstacles. It for me, it was impossible. And it's kind of a shame because I wished that I would have been able to see the end of this game. But I don't think I was going to be able to do it.
So that's it. We all quit at this point.
Right.
We're all out. But there is one more stage, right?
Would you like to talk about it, Sean? It is the final stage, and it's like you're finally you're at the end now. You've invaded the Bacterian army.
The Xeros super fortress
the
stage.
The Xerox
yes. Planet Xerox stage. It's just like a computery industrial looking space, right? Or
I think that's an appropriate thing for it. I always thought of it like, you know, looking at the screenshots, I thought of it more like you're inside a giant ship. If you remember in the Gradius cover on the front cover or something like that, it's like you're being chased by a giant green Star Destroyer. And so now I felt like this is you. And actually, no, now that I'm looking at the cover again, you're not being chased. You're charging right at this thing.
Yeah.
This is like the poster shot for scene 7 is the front cover of Gradius. That's really cool, actually. It's like you've just defeated all this evil amoeba and moaids and double volcanoes and upside down volcanoes. And it's like, you know what? Now screw it. I'm just going to shoot into the middle of a Star Destroyer and enter through its hub, I guess, to try and, like, defeat the Bacterian army.
So did you guys see any, like videos of the stage or anything?
Oh, yeah.
It's just filled
with volcanoes,
I didn't
Joe.
See anything.
It's filled with volcanoes.
I mean, my thoughts are that, you know, this is the ultimate stage of the game. So the fortress lies at the very heart of the nerve center of the Bacterian Empire.
That's your initial thought.
And is controlled by a complex biocomputer. didn't just read that directly out of the manual. Those are my original thoughts.
This is the first mother brain, if you will. Like, you know, Metroid obviously makes that a bigger deal. But yeah, that winds up being the final boss of the game is just this brain that's like, has like... I don't know how to describe it. What would you say, Sean? Because it's not... I don't want to say chained. It's not being
Isn't it just like those are connections?
Yeah, connections. It's powering the ship.
Cybernetic. Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Do you have to take out those?
No, you just have to shoot the brain. In fact, I don't know how to like let you down here, Joe, because you haven't even watched the video. But
all I know about it is what I just plagiarized out of the manual.
From watching the video, all you have to do is just. Be
just,
smart.
Just,
like,
shoot,
just
the brain.
Shoot the brain.
Just shoot the
like,
brain.
Shoot
is it hard?
Brain.
I mean,
shoot
the brain. I didn't get to the level.
No, nothing can hurt you. Like you're here now.
It's
like
so
this
wild.
Is like a rewarding like final cutscene.
Interesting.
The stupidest thing you can do is like play chicken with the brain, you know, and be like, you know, like charge at him or something. So you need to just like
just shoot the brain.
Yeah,
it's
just
funny
shoot
that it calls
the brain.
It, like. I guess ultimate just meaning the actual, like, just meaning the final stage. But, like, when it says this is the ultimate stage of the game, I think this is, like, the most intense stage of the
game.
Well,
to be fair, though, Joe, everything leading up to that moment is pretty intense. So I'm not saying that, like, this level's
cakewalk.
So
that's not the whole level. There's
oh,
the level.
Yeah, yeah,
okay,
yeah. There's
gotcha.
A, you have to, like, again, you've just entered the ship. Now you have to kind of navigate your way through the ship to get to the center
right.
brain.
Gotcha.
Looking at this image now of the Vic Viper and the brain, though, like next to each other, I'm thinking of like Star Fox 64 when you take the back route into Venom and then you fight Andross first by as like his normal form, but then his second form is not the mechanical bat, it's him as a brain with his eyes like shooting at you. That's I think that Star Fox 64 takes a cue from Gradius.
Me and Sean just looked at each other. We're like, do you know what he's talking
I'm like,
about?
We don't know what you're talking about.
I'm getting serious vibes of that. I'll show the guys afterwards, but I'll link that in the show notes. Star Fox 64 fans, don't tell me I'm wrong here. They definitely, like, Miyamoto kind of is like a Gradius player now in my book. All right, so that was the game, essentially. I think we feel pretty good about it that we walked through the whole game and didn't have too many complaints
besides the game
being hard as nails.
Yeah.
Controls?
I mean, they're pretty fluid.
Yeah, they're simple, so it's not too much that they could have screwed up other than like the actual motion, which I think feels great.
Yeah,
I think the motion feels great. I think it is a 60 FPS game. And like most NES games, it's not like that used to not be a big deal. It wasn't a hot topic to be 30 or 60.
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, one thing I did notice about the motion, which wasn't a bad thing, it just throws you off from what like most people I think are used to, is that you it's kind of slow moving. It almost feels like you're like there's a lot of resistance on your ship or something. Like, if you try and go up or down.
But that's not true, Joe. If you keep using
the speed up,
you just disregard
you just
everything,
turn into a twitchy
but
mess.
Then eventually you die, and then you're back to being like trudging through.
Investing in speed is a mistake anyway, because as Sean just mentioned, like you become too fast at a certain point. You
it's
know,
like, oh, I got to thread the needle between these two. Oh, I've hit the wall. Oh, I've hit the wall and I'm dead.
It's really tough. I actually tried that as one of my strategies for the Moai stage. I was like, well, maybe if I'm just really fast, I'll get out of this stage. No, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
It doesn't help. It just makes you a mess.
And I feel like you're surprisingly able to dodge things pretty well at that slow speed.
Like, you're able to dodge things well, and they're able to dodge you well, too. Like, sometimes I would think, like, okay, I just have to get a little more down, and then I'm going to shoot them. It's like, nope, still didn't line up.
Is it possible
and stuff like
that the hitbox is smaller than the sprite?
That could be. I never considered that. I mean, I wonder if the hitbox changes, too, between, like, the missile, the laser,
yeah.
I feel like the missile has a bigger hitbox than anything else.
Mm-hmm. You mean the...
Like, if I clipped, like, the edge of a wing of one of the enemy, like, fighters, does that count?
If your shot clips
them? If my shot does.
I don't think it counts.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think it counts, because there were many times I came close and it didn't happen.
Honestly, I felt like a few times, like, your own hitbox was maybe slightly smaller, because I felt like I was, like, dodging things, and I was like, oh, man, I totally hit that.
Yeah.
But it was like, I skimmed it.
I don't mind when a game does that, because it makes you feel cool. Yeah,
definitely.
All right, so that's controls. One other thing I want to mention is that this game does not help you if you have a turbo controller. Like, it doesn't make the gun fire rapidly like it did in 1942. It's still just, like, it has a limit to how much you can shoot.
I mean, it is definitely more efficient to be tapping the button instead of holding it, though.
Right, exactly. Weapons, I think we've went through that enough. Enemies, we talked about the cool ones, at least, in my opinion. Did any other enemies stand out for you guys?
I mean, I like that... In the beginning, they sort of introduced the concept of the ones that do fly in a very tight pattern. If you kill all of them, you can get rewarded with a power core.
They're like at the beginning of every level, right?
Yeah.
And that's like a note from Galaga and Xevious, the game that they were like trying to top.
they always talked about in the Gradius interviews how, like, Xevious is the standard. You know, like that's the game that you're trying to beat. And how can they do that when they're thinking about designing the game? So I'm not surprised that there are some cues from Xevious in these games. Power-ups? Any thoughts?
No, I think we've covered them.
Yeah, I think we covered power-ups enough. I'll add a quote here. At that time, Western computer RPGs were coming into Japan, and building your character was a kind of new gaming buzzword. We were thinking of ways to bring that concept into the shoot 'em up genre. Nowadays, it seems rather obvious, but back then, it was in combination no one had thought of. We also wanted to add other adventure aspects to Gradius. We planned a system where once you cleared a stage, you'd have a branching choice of where to go next. But in the end, due to memory space limitations, we couldn't add that feature. Again, that's a Star Fox thing, right? Like, you choose which planet you want to go to.
I get you.
I love how many things are happening here. And I think that's a really cool thing. Like, imagine you would have been able to choose your own path.
I love the enthusiasm you have for this. But I also like that that they were trying to move forward with the new ideas coming into these kinds of games just from PC gaming. But I like that they also kept something from older games that was a power up that we didn't really talk about, was if you found a blue one, it would just kill everything on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. You know what's funny is like that really only showed up for me in the Moai stage and in stage two.
I got that in stage two.
Yeah. In the Moai stage, it surprisingly didn't do much. But in stage two, yeah, it was helpful. But, like, it shows up just rare enough that it's not really... For me, it wasn't, like, a power-up. I just thought it was, like, a cool thing. Like, oh, wow, what's that? You know? I do like rare drops. I also like just about this quote is that he's thinking about other genres that don't even apply to his game. And he's like, how can we do stuff like that? Like, what should we do? And I just think, like... That's such a neat thing in game design, period, that developers today should still be asking themselves, you know, if you're trying to design like a platformer, but you're looking at like, you know, a game like Breath of the Wild, that's more like an action adventure game. It's like you can take cues, you know, from that. It doesn't have to be, the cue doesn't have to be open world. The cue can just be like design elements or, you know, the weapon breaking mechanics, like little things like that, and introducing them into your genre change your genre completely.
I hear what you're saying, Mike, and I agree, but I think Konami, they would go backwards and just say, no, don't do that. Turn into a pachinko machine.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Modern day Konami. All right. So, now that we've talked about all the levels and, you know, you guys were out at, like, stage four. I was gone at stage... Wait, were both of you guys gone at stage four?
I was not as far as Joe. I think I was stage three.
And I was gone at six. I think, like, we need to talk about the difficulty here because we were so relentless with the difficulty on Ghosts and Goblins. You know, it was one thing that really held us back in that game because we really enjoyed it, but the difficulty was killing us. Was the difficulty killing you guys here?
Here's the difference to me between this and Ghosts and Goblins. This wasn't... At a glance, this wasn't as difficult. It was very difficult. Wasn't as difficult as Ghosts and Goblins, but if you factor in the fact that you get three lives and you're done, I think this was more. This would be more. I don't even know if I want to say more. This would be more frustrating.
Well,
to
it's
me
harder.
To beat.
It's harder to make progress.
Exactly, and you can't just jump right back in and be like, "All right, let's do this."
But just looking at like individual like levels, Ghosts and Goblins, Head and Shoulders is more difficult. But this had a. This was pretty difficult. I mean, especially once I got to like level three and stuff, it took me a few restarts to get through it. Like it wasn't very easy.
I would say that while it's a very difficult game, I didn't feel the same kinds of frustrations that I did with Ghosts and Goblins simply because I like the feel of this game more than I like the feel of Ghosts and Goblins. So I enjoyed playing it, and every time I failed, I was like, okay, I'll just keep playing the game instead of this, what I felt as clunky fighting system and platforming system in Ghosts and Goblins. So
I agree with that, too.
I was not as bothered by how much I was dying in this game as in past games.
I don't know if this is, like, weird to say, but I find this, like, realistically difficult.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
it's really understandable where you're failing.
Right. And it's like, yes, they could have toned down certain areas so that it wasn't so ridiculous. For me, that's, like, the Moai Island stage or the later, like, amoebas and stuff like that. But I think, like, for the most part, the game is, like, it's not unfair. Like, it's not like, you know, nothing in this game to me screams like Red Devil, you know, right. Like that kind of level of frustration.
I would say that your style of play is, the game allows your style of play to be more expressive so that you can go in with different weapons and like whether or not you have the shield, or you can go in with different loadouts and try your luck a different way, and you have a better experimentation process than you would with Ghosts and Goblins, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. With especially just because the difference between like space exploration and platforming is like, you know, with Ghosts and Goblins, there's really only like one or two ways you can handle like going through a stage, whereas like with Gradius it's like you can go up and then switch back down to down, or you can go through the middle of the stage, you can shoot open and go through a cave. I think that's kind of cool that they accounted for that. All right, so since we were talking about difficulty and stuff like that, I think I need to address something for Joe here that you know, I wouldn't say that this should change your opinion on the game, but there are continues.
There are continues.
There are continues in the game, and this is the very first instance of the Konami code.
Yes, this was something that I ended up using, but not abusing.
Do you know the Konami code?
I don't.
You do. Okay, you ready?
Come on. I might, but wait. I want to mention, because this will come into play in a minute, before you just told me that, I wrote something in my notebook before I heard that, and I put my pen down, and later on you'll find out what that was, but I want people to know that I didn't change this.
Okay. you made a note to yourself?
I made a note to myself that I will talk about in a moment, but go on.
Right. But before I get any further, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. The Konami code is different than the continues code.
I didn't think I got continues when I used it.
Yeah. The Konami code is up, up, down, down, left, right, BA. Joe, still not ringing any
bells?
That
rings a bell, but what is that from?
Every Konami game. It's mostly famous from Contra, I think, is like the famous one.
I think
one,
that's
but,
probably where I've heard
but
it.
Every like NES Konami game, and even games way beyond that,
and some websites.
So there's a PlayStation game that's up, 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 down, down, left, right, left, right, square.
Probably a Konami game.
Square?
I want square.
Well,
I want to say
would
it's
make
Crash
sense.
Bandicoot
like
or something.
The Konami code is like, like Sean said, it's referenced on websites. I think even like Reddit used to have a thing that you could do to get something like that. It would have a narwhal show up on the homepage. But the Konami code there, actually, just if you pause the game while you're playing it, it gives you one speed up, missiles, two options, and a barrier force field. You know, like, so it pretty much is like a way for you to continue to progress on.
Yeah, I remember, just to explain that I'm not so bad that I can't even get past the third level with the Konami code, I had played through the game, and then I took a break from it, and I decided I would try it out with the Konami code. I wasn't just going to keep playing, though.
I love that they give you the Konami code, though, because here's the thing about the Konami code. It's not so game-breaking like Game Genie, where all of a sudden you have, like, I could just program the game to give me 99 lives, or I can have the games this way, I'm invincible. It's like, this gives you, like, a realistic way to be like, you know, I'm really enjoying this game, but I'm dying all the time, and I just want to get to, like, as far as I can, or I want to get further, I want to beat the game. This gives you, like, a realistic way of doing that, saying, like, hey, you might have lost all your stuff, but just put in the Konami code, and you'll get one speed up, missiles, two options, and a barrier.
Yeah. It's fair as far as cheats go.
The continue code, on the other hand, though, is when you get to the game over screen, you go down, up, BA, 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 and start, and then it will start you at the last stage you visited.
Wow.
Interesting.
I didn't know there were two codes.
Yeah, it's very interesting that there are two. Well, there's more codes than that, too. There's a lot of secrets in this game, and I just think, like, the continue one changes a lot for me.
Yeah, that makes a big difference in, like, how you're playing this
game.
I'll
be honest, I use the continue code to get all the way to stage 6. Like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm amazing at this game, but even the continue code won't save me to get to stage 7. You know, I still wasn't able to get there. So I respect these cheat codes because they don't outright break the game.
Right.
Is this the first example of a literal cheat code in a game, or
for us? Yeah, I feel like it is. I feel like for right now, you know, December 1986. Yeah.
Wow.
That's interesting. And I mean, the game also has like warp zones too, and stage bonuses, and even a way to skip stages.
Those not the warp zones?
That's not the warp zones. You can actually skip the stages. Here's an interesting way to do it.
I would have been nowhere near that inverted volcano stage if I knew I could skip
it. You have to defeat the bosses within 5 seconds of them appearing.
How do you do that?
Not the sub-bosses like the volcano and
the
stuff
core
like that.
Millennium
I'm talking
Falcon.
About that core Millennium Falcon-like thing. If you can kill that thing within 5 seconds, which if you have, I guess, enough power-ups, you can do it. Yeah. It'll actually let you skip the next stage only up to stage 5. Once you get to stage 5, you can't skip onwards. But I think it's like a really neat speedrun thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going for that. But the stage bonuses are cool. I mean, you know, Sean, you mentioned going through the like the cave-like thing in, was that stage 2 you were talking about?
I think that's in stage 1.
Okay, stage 1 where you're shooting, shoot the mountain, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And then in stage 2, there's a couple different like paths that you can take with the pink orbs or the Kirby Lifes,
yes.
as Joe might say. And so that's like throughout the different levels, there's stuff like that. And I just think that's like really neat that they included all these little secrets again. Like another thing that reminds me of Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Star Fox.
Yeah, no. Star Fox has a lot of secrets, though, guys. I cannot plug Star Fox 64. Not Star Fox for Super Nintendo. That game runs at like 10 FPS. Not even joking, actually. I think it's like 15, maybe. Interesting about Gradius here, stray thought for a minute. Gradius was also converted for the Nintendo Verse series.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you verse that?
Isn't that weird? Like, first off, it's not a Nintendo game, it's a Konami game, so what's it doing in the Nintendo Verse series? And is it, I don't know if it was called, like, Verse Gradius or whatever, but it's identical to the NES version, but it includes no cheat codes, but allows the player to continue indefinitely.
Wow.
Well, isn't that because it's an arcade game?
Well, so, yeah, but what I meant is like, basically, you never have to go back to stage 1. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
I would just think, like, give me your money, and you can keep playing.
It's exactly, yes, that's true. Yeah. You have to put in the quarter to keep going, but it's another way to, like, get to the end faster. You know, you don't have to, like, start all over.
Pay to win.
Yeah, this is an early example of Konami being like, well, you know, we do like money. And this is one more weird thought I have, and then I'll open the floor. But I was looking for, like, developer interviews and stuff like that. And, of course, I'm going to find a ton of that stuff on Shmupilations, which I'm going to link in the show notes. This is an amazing resource for people who are into shmups. But they included this, like, as part of, like, an interview with the director, and they didn't, like, they didn't source it. Like, they didn't say where they got it. It was, like, unknown article from 1996. And I just don't even know if this is true, but here's the quote, and just take this for what it's worth. Our offices were in Osaka during the Gradius development, and after we released the first game, a young kid of about elementary school age brought us 200,000 yen and asked us to sell him Gradius. Since this was a large amount of money, even to us, we called his parents to confirm, and they asked us to sell it to him. So we did. That we had a fan like this made me extremely happy. Does some child own Gradius?
Yeah, wait, sold
wait,
them like
wait,
what,
sold the rights?
Like
200,000 yen is a ton of money,
but
guys.
200,000 yen is like not that much money.
Right. It's okay. No, sorry, yeah, it's not that much.
That's
money.
Not even
but
that much money. It's like $20,000 like $2,000.
He's an elementary school kid. It was like it's $1,800 today. It's probably more like $3,000 in 1985. What is he doing with this? Is this story real?
It cannot be real.
Like
they're still making great. Well, I mean, not still making.
Did they really
games.
Take
well, that
this
kid's,
money?
That
too?
Kid's old enough to be developing games now.
I guess
they
so.
Took the money from a kid. Like he like where did he get 200,000?
Hey, he
yen?
Threw in the point.
Probably,
like his
they probably only
yes.
would have sold it to a kid. So the parents were like, "All right, send." Then send this kid in there to sell it.
You would think he'd have like $5
son,
on
kid.
Him. You know, like he was like, oh, here's $5. Can I buy Gradius? And they were like, haha, kid's so cute. Like called his parents. Do you mind if we take his $5? They're like, yeah, that's his allowance. Like, go ahead. He loves your game. And then they're like, oh, would you like to be in the game? And then they put his brain in the game.
Yeah, they took a scan of his brain.
They took a CAT scan of his brain. And they just took his money. Like, I think that's weird, but it's probably not a true story. Maybe Shmupilations puts that on there because they just like maybe they want to fact check people, like see if they're reading the interviews and like including these obscure. I don't know honestly if you're from Shmupilations or if you've ever read this or heard this story, like let me know. Like, yeah. Please, I'd love to find out if a grown adult, I guess, but at the time a child owned Gradius and let Konami continue to make games for them. They're like, yeah, you guys can make Gradius too. That's fine.
Can you imagine if he was actually just like a real like hard hitter, and as soon as they like made the deal, he was like just super straight with them.
Yeah, he was like, okay, no. Here's the deal. Yeah. Like, he pulls out like spreadsheets he's made. He's like, this is the levels for Gradius 2. The final boss will be a giant Moai. it is time for the essential games list. All right, it's time for the essential games list. I'm not going to explain this anymore. We're pretty much at that point now where you guys know what's going on. Is it essential today? Not in 1986, or I think this game came out in 85, 84 in Japan. So we're talking about 86, though, because it's NES. See, I'm already explaining it too much, guys. So take it away, Sean. Is this game essential?
I think that this game is a boatload of fun to play. I think that it has a lot of value. I don't think that anything has really been lost over time. It's the best scrolling game that we've played in terms of like whether it's a top down or a sideways. Like, I hated 1942. I didn't really like Commando, if you want to consider this a part of the same genre. I think this really showed what this genre can be on a home computer system. And I think that its legacy and just how fun it still is to play, I think it's I'm gonna rate it essential.
Wow. We have one essential vote. There's three of us, so we need two to put it in there. Joe.
All right. I might get a little long-winded here, so everybody settle in.
I'll settle in.
So get a drink if you want. First of all, this kind of scrolling shmup is not usually my kind of game. So it's been hard for me to judge this one. And I was, you know, I've got a lot of back and forth in my head up until like in this session. I was still thinking about it. But I think the game's beautiful. It's got a really great design, and it's one of the better like looking and feeling games of this genre that we've played so far. But maybe like of this genre that I've ever played, like one of the better feeling games to me. And I think somebody who enjoys this kind of game in general would really love this game. Probably more so than I did, but I don't know if it's something that I personally would frequently be like, I want to go back and play that again. But like while I'm playing it, like I can understand that there might be someone out there that doesn't like platformers, but I bet they could see Super Mario Brothers and be like, yeah, this is essential. So before you mentioned to me about the continues, I was very, very torn, and I finally made a decision and wrote it down in my notebook before you said the continues.
Love it.
And it didn't change when you said the continues, but it did reassure me a little bit that I also vote this game essential.
Wow. It is on the list. I will give my thoughts, though, just to let the record stand. Here's the interesting thing about Gradius for me. Yes, the arcade version's better. This is not arcade nostalgia. We focus on the NES games. We're talking about the essential NES games of modern times, right? Like, not what was just great when it came out. So even though this is probably the best shmup that we've played so far in the NES, I mean, like, we have so many more games to go. Who's to say we're not going to see something better, right? Here's the interesting thing about Gradius. You have a very, like, simply designed game where it's like you have all the limitations of the NES. You have to use your imagination for a lot of it. The designs of the sprites are beautiful, in my opinion, when you give, like, when you understand the limitations. In a game like Super Mario Brothers, Legend of Zelda, like the Metroid, those kind of like heavy hitters from Nintendo. Those games are good, yes, because of their gameplay, but also because of the choice that they bring to the players and the personality that the game brings on to you. You don't think of The Legend of Zelda as an action adventure game. You think of The Legend of Zelda as a Zelda game. I don't think of Gradius as like just another shmup. I think of it as a Gradius game. And I think that's like what makes this game for me essential as well, is that when you play this game, even if you're not good at it, even if it's a little harder than you'd like, I think that player choice in this game, especially when it comes to power-ups and just like the idea that you do kind of like control this game a little more than any game we've seen so far, even Super Mario Brothers in that regard, because with your power-ups there, it's like, unless you choose not to take the mushroom because you'd rather slide through certain, like, you know, areas, which isn't really a thing, you know, you're mostly just going to continue to want to get stronger and stronger. And while you do want to get stronger and stronger in Gradius, you also have to, you have to think about, like, okay, I've seen stage four a couple times now. I'm dying these ways. What power-ups are essential to me to get this to keep going? And I just think, like, between player choice, tight controls, extreme personality, and the fact that the game sticks out because of its own, like, story and setting and design, I think this game is essential, no doubts.
Awesome. We are in agreement. Yes.
Really, really cool.
I wonder what Sam would think.
We will have to get Sam's take. Right. I actually don't have anything from Sam currently, but we'll get that for the website,
of course.
Best of
1985s, too. We'll,
Well, best of 1986. When we do that best of 1986, we're actually going to have a lot of rogue thoughts from Sam, because he won't be on next week's episode either. So who knows how this guy feels about games right now. Like, he's just going to come in and surprise us with that list. Guys, I feel really good that Gradius is on the list. This was one of the games I was really looking forward to in the Best of 1985 episode. It's a game that I loved, not only just because of its, like, story and its gameplay as a series, but just, like, it's really fun to play no matter how many times I go back to it.
Yeah, it's very strange that, like, because I'm really not a fan of the genre in general. I mean, the last two put a really bad taste in my mouth that was like, oh, God, these games. But Gradius is just, I can see myself, I will be playing this game again in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I if I play it again, I'll enjoy it. It's just not one that I'm like, that I would usually seek out, which is why when I was playing this last, I remember thinking, like, this could be essential, and I was about to put it essential, and then I started thinking, do I have to take into account how I feel? And I don't think you do. I think I can see that it's essential, even if I don't necessarily want to be playing it. I think it's essential for anyone who even remotely likes these kind of games.
Very cool, very cool. And just, I mean, like, even just to talk about how much we like this game, we talked for so long now, and other than, like, one small mention, we never even talked about the music, the thing that we've been playing throughout the podcast episode. But it's like, that stuff is good too. Even the sound design of, like, you know, when you did blow up an enemy, or, like, your missiles and stuff like that, like, all that stuff is cool. Like, it's just an extra thing that the game has going for it. But
I mean, what else is Mario? Is there something else that, like, comes around the same level as this?
Right, like such, like, a complete package from beginning to end.
Yeah, that's like, the first thing that I said was that this is the first game that feels like it's on a new system.
Right,
right.
Yeah, I mean,
with Super Mario.
No, I agree. I mean, like, we also voted in Mach Rider and Balloon Fight for 1986 so far, and I think, like, I understand what you're saying, though. Those games don't necessarily feel, like, removed from the arcade in the regards that, like, you know, they're really just one style of gameplay done over and over and over again. That's enjoyable. Whereas, like, Gradius continues to, like, reinvent itself on every single stage and, like, how you would go about playing this type of game. Same thing with Super Mario Brothers. It's not just World 1-1 over and over again 36 times. That would suck, you know? So I love that. Very cool that we got this on the list. That's all the time we have for this episode of Nestalgia. Join us next time for Karate Champ, and be sure to play it yourself if you can. If you can. You'll understand why in the next week's episode. If you don't get a chance to play, you'll understand why I say that. You know, for more Nestalgia, you know, don't be afraid to go onto the website. That's nostalgiacast.com. I'm not going to spell it out for you because no one's actively typing it in on their keyboard as I'm saying it. They're like, wait, N-E-S. Like, not going to do it. Not going to finish it. But you can find lots of cool stuff there. Did you ever wonder, like, what Miyamoto did during his time making the launch NES games? Spoiler alert, he wasn't making those launch NES games. Most of them were just ports, or he was working on, like, other stuff. And then they, you know, like, it's a long story. Basically, Japan was always years ahead of us. Everybody remembers Pokemon Green, right?
Of course.
Of course.
This is a ramble.
Yeah. You can visit us there, or you can visit us at our offices, at the NostalgiaCast offices.
Yeah, yes. NostalgiaCast offices.
And look for the one in your city.
Yeah. We'll be at all of them.
Yep. I'll definitely be signing copies of your cell phone if you listen to it on a podcast, which is a great way to listen to the episodes, you know. I don't care if you listen to it on Apple Podcasts or Google Play, or Overcast or Pocket Cast, however you listen to it, just make sure you hit that subscribe button, because if I sign your phone and then see you're not subscribed, I'm going to have to break your phone in half. That's just a rule. And speaking of breaking things in half, the show notes will be complete with a list of everything that we have talked about today. They won't be. I won't give the show notes in half. If you go to the website,
it's one of the big features that draw people to nostalgia.
It's kind of crazy. Yeah, it's not like some are at the top of the article and others are at the bottom. At the very top of the article, I automatically send you to other websites free of charge. You know, there's no like PayPal like donation link on our website and stuff like that. So it's just like really cool that we just happen to not need your money. You know, like how many other podcasts have ended with like, you know, and don't forget, you know, like Patreon account and like, you know, $5 a month, you'll get access to the high res episodes. Like, no, just come tell us we're fun people to hang out with. If you hang out with us every Friday or whenever you get around to these episodes, look, I know it's been a stressful week. If you want to wait till Sunday to listen to the episode, if you're listening right now and it's Tuesday,
Jeff,
go for it, okay? And go play Gradius, because it's essential. Join us next time. Bye. What a long episode.
Yeah, well, yeah, how long was that?
That was over an hour. I think that was 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Nice. We love Gradius.
We do. Yeah. Honestly, I was so... I kept going back and forth before this, and I
this is when
like,
I decided
essential.
It was essential, when I realized that he was charging instead of fleeing away. I was like, that
you
is as
that
badass.
You're being chased?
That's as badass. Well, I guess I never really like looked at it hard enough, but that's as badass as... you know, like, you are Mach Rider.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Vic Viper, and he's just, like, charging in on that. I love how, like, you aren't Vic Viper. The ship is. Yeah, like, that's the name of the ship.
Vic.
That's so
Vic
cool.
Vic Viper.
Like, yeah, it has a first and last name. What other ship has a first and last name?
The Millennium Falcon.
The Millennium is its first name, please.
Yeah,
that's, like, the Millennium
the
Eye. Like, that's, like, talking
name.
About, like, Yugi has the Millennium Eye.
The is the first name. Millennium's the middle name.